Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you. In step, you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors. For over 50 years, visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. We've got producers Elon and Ben. We've got intern Kieran and my co-host, Thomas Drantz. How are you?
We've got Ben's hair game always on point and Elon's in a sick Knicks cap.
And then
that's the best sportswear we've seen in studio, I think, all year.
Elon's always bringing it.
Yeah, he is always bringing it.
Big compliment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Drip King over there on the P's and Q's.
Drip King.
Very nice start to the day. Happy Friday.
Yeah. Kieran's sitting back there in a Celtics hat like, oh, man.
Yeah. Tough break. Where's my love?
Tough break. Nice hat too, Kieran. You've got a nice hat too. From an unbiased standpoint, both nice hats.
No doubt. Hey, what a fun night of playoff hockey last night.
It was wonderful.
Actually, that's not quite true. The Caps and Carolina Hurricanes also played.
Yeah, dude. Going into that series, Lena and I were talking about it on Canucks Bench, and I was like, I hope I care, but I don't think I'll care. And I was right.
I will say I thought the Hurricanes' pressure in the final 5 minutes and the two power play goals in the third period were beautiful. That Tom Wilson backdoor pass to John Carlson for the game winner was marvelous. And then I loved the Gostis Bear shot was just an absolute badass finish from the Carolina Hurricanes defenseman. So like the third period had something to recommend it. But for the most part, you know, what's kind of funny is that game felt like a throwback. That felt like the playoff games we used to watch 6 to 10 years ago in terms of the flow, in terms of the final score, in terms of the quality of the scoring chances. And then the Edmonton Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights played, and it was pure, unadulterated 2025 era Stanley Cup playoff chaos. We've kind of had two series for me, Josh, that ugly Senators-Leafs series and this Carolina Capitals series through two games that have kind of felt so out of step with everything else we've been witnessing.
Yeah, that's fair.
For the most part, these playoff games have felt, I don't know, almost more like NBA games, like with like crazy comebacks. No one can hold a lead. You know what I mean? Like you're watching these games and a team's up 3-1 or by two goals with 15 minutes remaining and you know you're locked in. Do you remember when it was like 3-1 in a playoff game and you'd be like, well, that's it.
Yeah, good run, guys.
It's a wrap.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no world like that Carolina. When Carolina was down 2-0 with 15 minutes to go last night, I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. Because I know they're going to turn up and have some wild, heavy shifts and dominate possession and generate some scoring chances. And they did. And actually, I thought they put the Caps under a fair bit of duress, really challenged to score. There was a 3-on-1 with like 4 minutes remaining that Trevor Van Riemsdyk of the Capitals did a fabulous job to break up. You know, I can't remember the Carolina forward who made the pass. I know that it was Stankoven and Chatfield with him. Mm-hmm. He does better on that play. And that's where we probably get two overtime games out of last night. And then it would have been another classic in what's been like, honestly, I know the Canucks fans aren't in it. I know the weather's good. I know it's fun to do stuff around the city. Go home and turn on hockey, man. Go home and turn on hockey every night. Right now, the product is as good as it's ever been. It is so much fun to watch on a nightly basis.
Let's get more into the Oilers and Golden Knights game and more around your Vancouver Canucks. It's time for the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is the whiteboard, your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. By the way, this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. One day I'll have as good of a what's up as Jamie Dodd.
Oh, I thought you hit it really hard. I was impressed.
Thank you.
I almost stopped you to say something, but then I was like, I know that he has some bills to pay, so I'm not going to interrupt. But now that you brought it up, I will say, I thought you hit that really hard. Wow. Jamie, like, for shame, Jamie Dodd.
Wow.
For shame.
You really got to match the tone. He has a tone in which he says, what's up? And that's what you need to find.
It's because he truly believes that what's up is an acceptable thing to say as a greeting.
It definitely
is. Like, that's the key. The key is that he believes it. Like, most adults know not to start conversations that way, but Jamie, Jamie goes for it because he doesn't have that lack, like he doesn't have that level of like reflectiveness.
I'm kind of team Jamie on this, to be honest. I say what up to people. I don't even throw an S in there.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm a casual guy.
You are way cooler than me, man. I saw this article in The Guardian. Did you see this article in The Guardian that was like, and it was like, so cringe, exclamation mark, millennials no longer cool. And I just like saw the headline and I was like, I never was, man. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's status quo for me. I'm feeling okay.
Like when I get together with my millennial friends and we're all 40 talking about kids and stuff. And it's just like, yeah, obviously we're not cool. We suck.
I have like 4 younger siblings. And when I talk to them and I'm like, I'm washed, man. It's over. Oh, yeah. This is tough.
Yeah, that's hanging out with Harmon Dial. The first training camp I ever covered with Harmon Dial, we were in Victoria. And I was like, I said to him after we finished, we like wrapped, we'd written, and I was like, do you want to go for a beer? And he was like, are we going to go to like the club? And I looked at him and I was like, oh, that's so sweet that you think I could do that.
No, we are definitely not doing that. By the way, I have 5 younger siblings. I hope my family is not listening. I said 4.
Wow.
There's 5 of them. I forgot.
That's like when I said I was single on the show.
Yeah. You know what? We all make mistakes. Mine might be less detrimental, but that's okay. Okay. Moving on to hockey. So you touched on the Capitals Hurricanes game. That series tied at 1. Washington with a win. Tied the series at 1. Tom Wilson had a really eventful game in Washington. But the much more fun game, the Edmonton Oilers beating the Vegas Golden Knights in overtime. They lead the series 2-0, heading home to Edmonton. I know you're a big Oilers were going to win the series guy. I hate to say that I thought the Golden Knights would. I feel very wrong right now.
Well, I thought the Golden Knights were the better team last night.
You know, I would agree.
It's such an interesting, like one of the things that I thought was so interesting about last night was, if Ivan Barbashev had an average amount of finishing touch, I think Jack Eichel would have had a historic passing game. Like, I think there was a real opportunity for him to have something like 6 or 7 assists in terms of what was generated off of his stick. I also thought, up until the very final rush, that Eichel won the matchup against Connor McDavid, that the Vegas Golden Knights should have outscored the Oilers by a crooked number in their head-to-head minutes, that he was an oppressive two-way force against McDavid throughout the evening, and that I was shocked by how little of quality the Oilers were generating in that head-to-head matchup. And then McDavid makes him look like a beer league checker on the critical rush of the game.
Yeah.
Like, goes through him. And that's just a reminder of the power that McDavid has on these ice sheets. Like, I legitimately do not think you can do a better job against him than Eichel did last night. They absolutely, like, Eichel had the game on a string. He was setting up grade A chances consistently. He set up a beauty for the 4-3 goal, which got Vegas back into it. Like, he was just brilliant. But the finishing luck in terms of his line mates finishing his chances, and of course the fact that McDavid just at some point, you know, is able to take the aluminum rod of the game and break it over his knee, made the difference. Like, that was it. Just so interesting how quickly, like, playoff legacies and conversations can flip on a dime at this time of year. I thought that was maybe one of the most impressive performances of Jack Eichel's game and all anyone, or one of the most impressive games of Jack Eichel's career, and all anyone is going to remember is that he got dusted in the overtime.
And I don't blame him. Like, it's McDavid, man. That's so scary. The one thing I will say, that is a frightening thing.
No, he is Jason, right? Like, McDavid is, like, always walking slowly behind you, basically, if you're in the NHL at this point.
My wife, who's, like, not a hockey fan, was watching the overtime with me, and the Golden Knights take the major. And it was, like, every time McDavid had the puck through the neutral zone, she was like, oh, no. Like, he is insane. And even to casual viewers, they can recognize that, like, man, this guy is doing crazy stuff out there. And it's just, when he's coming at you with speed, Jack Eichel got a big taste of it. It is a very terrifying thing for any player in the NHL. And I, the one thing I will say about what you just said in regards to, hey, Eichel had a good game, Vegas probably had a good game, it still didn't matter in the end. You know, that's the thing about, like, as someone that looked at Vegas as I believe they could win the series, even when you have a good game and you have in your best players playing at a super high level like Jack Eichel was, the Oilers can still just throw McDavid and Draisaitl at you and they're going to win.
Yeah, there's like a threat to what McDavid offers that even when he's not on his game, and I didn't think he was on his game last night, frankly, the ability that he, the potential, like he's got the actual energy of moving like a freight train, but he's also got the like kinetic energy of you knowing that he can move like a freight train. And like, I'll tell you right now, from the perspective, for example, of, I don't know, say like a Canucks defender who is primarily responsible for driving this team offensively, right? Think about what you have to do to for your team to get to where you need, know they need to go, right? If you're Quinn Hughes, you think, I've got to walk the line, I've got to take this chance up high, right? Like, Quinn Hughes basically lives as a trapeze artist, right? He is always playing fast and loose with the opportunity that, hey, I'm the last man back, I need to make something creative happen. If someone gets a stick on this puck, it is going to be an odd man rush against. Think about operating in like a game six or a game seven environment in the Stanley Cup playoffs where the guy coming to cut off the top and check you up high is McDavid. Like, the consequence of a flub, of turnover, of the puck not doing exactly what you want it to do is so severe. And I think that played a role in what we saw from the Canucks and the Oilers last year. And you know, I think that plays a role too in what we're seeing all over the ice. Like, the threat that McDavid poses is just this guy who's going to counter and destroy you immediately, whether he's on his game or not, shapes the entire contest. And I thought it did last night, even in a game in which McDavid absolutely did not have it.
So some news from the game.
Did not have it until he very, very clearly
he very much had it right at the end.
Yeah, kind of a Four Nations final performance for McDavid there.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Nick Waugh will have a hearing for his cross-check to the face of Trent Frederick.
What was he doing?
I don't know, man. I saw some Vegas fans, and obviously, like, the Vegas fans are going to back their guy, but being like, oh, he was just trying to play the puck. I was like, no, that was a cross-checking motion. That's a poor way to play the puck if you're trying to play the puck while it's in the air.
Honestly, if he just completely lost his mind in a second, I understand that more than if he was trying to play the puck.
Yeah.
Like, if he was trying to play the puck, then that's even worse from a hockey IQ perspective. I've watched Nick Waugh play a lot. I'm a big fan of his game. I do not think that he is a player who's that low IQ. I just think he lost his mind for a second. Like, I just think he took a couple cross checks in the back. I think he snapped. I think he's going to get a game.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
And hopefully Vegas overreacts and puts him on the trade market, because you want an upside top six center with some size, right-handed, still young, more offensive skill than, I mean, hopefully Vegas really overreacts to this.
They see this and they're like, we're completely
like,
out of
it. Oh, man, what a dumb play. Better trade him.
Yeah.
Better trade him, I say, crossing my fingers, because Nick was so cool.
We got a text from Rafe, 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Too bad the refs missed the trip on McNabb.
Terrible.
So that was
So here's the problem with that, right? Like, you're going to miss calls. I actually think, with the exception of that second period in Leafs-Panthers the other day and that missed trip last night, I think for the most part the officiating's been decent. Like, at the very least, I haven't felt the compulsion to come in the next day and be like, well, we're going to be talking about that call or that missed call or that was a decisive moment in the game. You know, I feel like we've been mostly able to enjoy, you know, 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks of solid, uninterrupted, excellent high level playoff hockey without the officiating being a significant focus of conversation.
It's always partly a focus because fans, especially in the playoffs, are going to get mad about something.
Well, for sure. People watch hockey so negatively. Right? You're just like watching, you're like, I can't believe they didn't call that. Like, oh, that guy on my team sucks. Like, you know, like, people watch hockey negatively, which I actually think, you know, if you're a big hockey fan, I challenge you to sort of consider it. Think about it while you're watching. Like, I actually think it's unfortunate because it means that we're we spend too little time focused on and appreciating what we're seeing sometimes, and too much time doing the like sort of like slow simmering rage of watching hockey, and then eventually being like, yeah, goal.
Yeah, one good thing happened.
And it's like, how are you so excited? You've been yelling at your TV for 25 minutes. By the way, I have no problem. Like, if it's your release, you watch hockey how you want. But I do think there's an extent to which hockey is processed negatively by fans. But whatever. Aside from that, like, I think most of that is just, like, not serious in terms of how we should talk about the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
And I think mostly the officiating's been good. My problem with that missed trip is that's an actual dangerous play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to miss a trip or like, you know, McDavid clearly interfered with Mark Stone during the 5-minute power play where he kind of like took his ice and then like he somersaulted over him. But to me, it's like, that's fine. That's like a 50-50 for me. And I'm fine at this time of year if referees want to say, hey, we're going to let them fight for space there. Or, you know, it's a minor trip. Stick got cut up. Guy fell at slow, you know, and it was slow moving and whatever. No problem with that. What I do think needs to be a penalty is a trip like that that causes a collision with the wall that probably did injure McNabb.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how severely, but had the potential to really severely injure McNabb.
It was just a dangerous spot to be.
Yeah, and it wasn't intentional. Like, you know, I saw reports that Arvidsson wasn't going to have a hearing. Obviously wasn't going to have a hearing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it was a negligent or a reckless stick in between his legs. It wasn't a willful attempt to injure or something that needs to be punished by suspension. What you do need though is a play that risks that level of harm coming to an opponent needs to be actively and officially discouraged, and there should be no question about enforcing that call regardless of the stakes of the game. Like, if a hit has an opportunity to cause like a severe neck injury, a severe head injury, a severe shoulder separation, right, take weeks out of a guy's career, months maybe. I need to see it called. I don't care if it's playoff overtime. And that was why that one had to be called, was that the possible consequences of the sequence were dire for McNabb. And we hope that he's avoided the worst of it. Obviously, we don't have a like serious update yet on his condition, but I hope that he's fine. I hope that it's not as bad as it looked. But yeah, that needs to be called because the consequences of it can be super severe for the players involved, and I want to see that called every single time regardless of the stakes.
I agree. I know some people when they talk about officiating in the postseason, they're like, oh, just call it like the regular season, like just be consistent game to game. And for me, like, I do have a little more leeway, especially in the playoffs when things are let go a little bit. But to your point, when something is so clearly a dangerous play, that to me needs to be called.
Yes, agreed.
650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in there. Actually, before we move on, I did see this online to put a Canucks spin on this Oilers Golden Knights game. Namely, I got into an argument with Dom, 32 Thoughts producer. He also works here at Sportsnet 650, about Vasily Podkolzin. Scored a goal, had an assist. He has 6 points in 8 playoff games. And a lot of people upset and saying the Canucks maybe moved on too quickly from Vasily Podkolzin. What do you think, Trans?
So I'm of two minds here. I mean, look around the league right now. Look around the results yesterday. Look at every series. And, you know, I wrote a big piece about playoff trends in The Athletic today, and we can get into some of that a little bit later on. But I didn't spotlight this because I don't need to. We all know the score in terms of the player type that dominates at this time of year, right? Adam Lowry for the Winnipeg Jets. Mikko Rantanen. Did you know he's a giant human being?
Yeah.
Matthew Nyes. Tom Wilson. Matthew Tkachuk. You know, in that Vegas series, you're seeing it with it's not just Podkolzin. It's also Hyman and that Evander Kane line. Right, it's also Stone, it's Eichel, it's Brett Howden, who's come up huge for Vegas across the playoffs. It's, you know, I mean, you need speed, but man, the big hulking forward capable of operating in traffic, like, it's a commonality. There's no playoff series that's being shaped without the decisive input of that player type. And Vasily Podkolzin has a few key attributes that make him that type of guy. And that the Canucks were, you know, specifically pursuing in drafting him when they did. You know, he's heavy. He's a heavy body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Again, don't look at listed height and weight, although he's got those. Podkolzin is materially heavier than your average 6'1" forward, and he plays like it. He is a sore loser. Non-derogatory. Right? He has a two-way conscience. He works his tail off to be in position. And, yeah, it's cool to see him scoring. Now, I will say, he had a shift in overtime. They put him with McDavid. And he looked downright terrified.
Yeah.
So I still, like, I think it was his last shift. He also collided with, I can't remember who they were playing with. It was a makeshift line. It was McDavid. It was Podkolzin. And it was, I think, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but it might have been someone else. He collided with them on a McDavid entry attempt and sort of foiled it as Knobloch kind of started to mix his forward lines with to no great effect in the early part of that overtime frame. And so there's still moments where I watch Podkolzin play where you can see the gears turning for him, where he looks like a thinker on the ice. And
that usually happened. That happened in Vancouver too. Whenever he plays
all
with
the
stars,
time.
Especially like yes. up in the lineup, it's like, oh man, you can see that it has an effect on him.
Right. I think you're right. I think he's and everyone I've ever spoken with in the organization like loved his work ethic. Loved like you know he had an English tutor, and him and his wife really tried hard to learn English. Their immigration paperwork was like done the next day, and it was complicated. Remember, Podkolzin like emigrated to Canada during COVID. At one point, he had to like fly to another Eastern European country to get like a vaccine that was like approved for him to land in North America. You know what I mean? Like his path was really difficult to get to the NHL relative to what even other Russian players encounter because of when he made the move to play North American professional hockey. And he was like always organized on top of it. Clever. Like I think he's a really smart human being, not just smart for a hockey player. I think he's like a really responsible, mature individual. And I actually think that's still something that can hold him back a little bit. I think there's like an element to which he can struggle to be instinctive because he, maybe thinks just a little bit too much or a little bit too clearly. And I thought I could still see that element in his game. What's scary is if he ever learns to harness that intelligence and you know, because it is a strength. It just happens to be a little bit in his way, given the type of game he should play or would be most effective playing. If he can ever harness it truly, man, I still think there's another level there. Did the Canucks give up on him too early? Yeah. Yeah. And I said so at the time. Specifically, I think it is wild that at no point in his Canucks tenure was he ever just given like 50 games in a clear energy role. That's all I said. I said it on this program every 2-3 months for his entire Canucks tenure. I want to see him on the Bo Horvat plan. I want to see him thrown on a fourth line. I want him told that you're going to play 10 minutes a night and it doesn't matter how well you play and it doesn't matter how badly you play. The only thing I want to see from you is go full tilt during your shifts, finish hits, play with energy. That's it. And get him a reliable like veteran to play off of. Like that was all I ever wanted to see the Canucks try with Podkolzin. 50 games. See where you're at the end of those 50 games. This organization instead had him go through 3 coaches. He never found that confidence. He was up and down the lineup. He was in and out of the lineup. They never committed to a plan to let him get his feet under him in a simplified way in the NHL. And I think that was wild. It never made sense to me, and I do think the organization deserves criticism for it.
For me personally, I kind of think I can see your reasoning. I just almost wonder if now it's gotten to a point where he is what he is, and maybe he does have room to grow. For me, I look at it, and I'm not too broken up about Vasily Podkolzin not being on the team anymore, especially because I view him still as just a bottom six forward. I hope he proves me wrong because he does. I liked him when he was in Vancouver. He does seem like a smart player, but I can't get broken up about the Canucks not having another bottom six winger on their roster right now. But feel free to text in 650, 650, your thoughts on that. Before we go, we're kind of up against it. The one to watch brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire for tonight. The Winnipeg Jets taking on the Dallas Stars game two at 6:30. I'm saying the one to watch is Josh Morrissey, who will be back in the lineup, expected to return for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Big addition into the Jets lineup. Did you have one?
Yeah, I'm really excited to watch the Panthers turn up tonight. Look, I don't know if the Panthers are going to be able to win four of five and dispatch the Toronto Maple Leafs at this juncture. I don't know if they can save us from our long impending national nightmare of an inexorable march to the Stanley Cup final, a Toronto-Edmonton Stanley Cup final. But I'll tell you this. They are absolutely going to turn up and throw 150 miles per hour today, and it's going to be a sight to behold.
All right, we'll see that game at 4 o'clock. Game 3, Leafs leading the series 2-0. It's time to put on your Toyo tires. Whether you drive a car, light truck, or van, Toyo tires are designed to perform in all kinds of conditions. Visit Delaney's OK Tire in Langley and Aldergrove. We'll get into more on the other side. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Strands on Sportsnet 650.